Well, Australian cricket fans are set for a cracking summer, weather permitting, of course. We've got an Ashes series, and on top of that, we are tuning in for the 11th edition of the Big Bash. Trent Woodhill is a coach, consultant and guru who's worked with the biggest names in world cricket as well as the top T20 leagues, and he joins me on the line right now. G'day, Trent.
G'day, mate. How are you going?
Going very well. Look, I suppose Australian fans owe you a debt of gratitude for fine-tuning Davey Warner during the World Cup, and that advice saw him earn Player of the Tournament honours, and it goes to show that you never write off a champion.
Exactly right. Yeah, I mean, a small fraction of credit I'll take. That's about it. David's really good at figuring things out himself, and all along he was confident that he was okay, and for a couple of months he'd been saying he'd been hitting the ball well. He just needed some luck and some time in the middle.
Just on the World Cup, so many people didn't rate Australia a chance at all, and the data analysts had effectively written Australia off. You know, too many top order players and no finishes. They end up winning the thing. What does it tell us? Are we too narrow in our view of what is a successful T20 formula?
I think so. I think it changes. I think you've almost got to look at each game as an event rather than, you know, maybe delving too deep into patterns. And because the pitches, there's so much variation in pitches that it's hard to always use the data for good rather than evil. It tends to end up being a hindsight thing. And then as fans, we jump on the bandwagon about people not being good enough or teams not being good enough. Mm. But I felt that what really exposed other nations is Australia's ability to scrap in a competition. I think that's where, you know, you really can't read too much in the data there, because the guys who performed, and it was almost to a man that they performed, they had the ability to find a way and to problem solve. And that's credit to the players and the coaching staff.
Well, Pat Cummins was the youngest guy on the side, and he's 28. You know, 10 years ago, he was also the youngest bloke in the side. So they backed their experience and it worked.
Yeah, well, you see that the short-form cricket's actually a game for experience. You know, Dan Christian's won every competition in the world and probably won one on the moon as well. And you know, Dan's pushing 40, but that knowing what to do in a moment, it's that experience which can't be you know, taught or bought or analysed. And so guys like Dan, who wasn't there, but also was around the periphery of that squad leading up to it, you know, and the senior players like Finch, Warner, etc. They've got so much experience that they can stay calm in the big moments.
I love this line in your article today on The Raw. You say, we get weighed down about how things have been done, or we think how they should be done and not how they can be improved. Is there a tendency to overcoach, you know, to tinker too much with technique? And I always think about the golfer Jim Furyk, Trent, you know, the ugly swing, the octopus falling out of a tree. But rather than correct him, it was noticed, well, hang on, he keeps hitting the ball straight. So rather than tinker with it, it's a case of, well, how do you produce that in a professional environment?
100%. I use Jim Furyk a lot, actually, as an example, that there's not too many golfers. I reckon other than Woods, nobody has come back from a major swing change to win a major. Mm. Faldo and Norman, at the peak of their powers, they tried to change their swing looking for perfection. And what happens is that under pressure, that doesn't hold up, because you're so used to doing things a certain way under pressure, as Furyk does, that any changes, they have to be bedded in and they have to be natural. And in my experience, I haven't seen a grip change in a batsman or a action change in a bowler where a player's come back more successful. Mm. So, yeah, we can overcoach. And, you know, we had minimal impact. And someone like David, I had minimal impact. It's making sure he's doing what he needs and he wants to do rather than me always looking to change or tinker with him.
Alex Carey looks like he's got the nod for the first test. I'm really pleased for him. You had a bit to do with Alex in his early days. And you point out today that there's probably underinvestment in wicketkeeping in Australia. Just tell us why you think Carey's going to thrive in that role.
I use the phrase problem solver, right? And people like Greg Shipp and Andrew McDonald are really, really big on that in their coaching. And what that means is, you know, he's a multi-format player. He was the captain of the Giants before they entered the competition officially. Multi-format, athletic, AFL background, cricket background. So he has that ability to bring all those experiences into what he does. He's had a really good 4 years in white ball cricket for Australia. And I just think he'll succeed. And I think if the public can get behind him, you'll see an athlete who's really, you know, he's a really good gloveman and a really good batsman.
Well, still
I saw him as a young kid. I saw him as a 17-year-old and was blown away by just how good he was. And I didn't know him, but I just wondered, you know, his pathway would look like. And I was I was disappointed he was going through the AFL line, but then you see that crossover in sports is so important to the young kids growing up.
Yeah, he's such a ripper of a bloke too, isn't he, Alex? You've written at length about adjusting from red ball to white ball cricket. We know that Carey's Shield numbers have been a bit underwhelming this season, but he did get that 100 in the Marsh Cup. I mean, how much value is there in that in terms of the form he will now carry into the Test arena?
It's enormous value because he's under pressure. He needed runs. And, you know, the public and selection, you know, they're wanting to judge. And under pressure when people are looking at that game, he succeeded. And he did the same thing in October last year in Manchester at, you know, 5-70 Australia, where, you know, in the dressing room, we thought maybe we're gone here chasing 300. But him and with Maxwell, you know, got them over the line. So he's used to pressure and he's used to big moments. So, you know, Ashes Test have given the opportunity in a big crowd to Gabba. He's going to make a good account of himself.
In Test cricket, you talk about just focusing on the next ball. So when coaching a batter, I mean, how much attention, Trent, do you get them to pay to individual bowlers? So say, for example, well, you've got to be facing Anderson with the new ball under lights in Adelaide. Does that inform your coaching or is it ultimately not relevant?
I don't think it's as relevant as what some make out. I think you can overlook at what the bowler's trying to do. I think it changes with someone like a Rashid Khan or a Sunil Narine, where their variation is immense. Seam up, you know, quick bowlers, once the players have had a good look at, you know, their release point and dealt with the bounce and the subtle changes, they're good to go. And you can almost try and blunt the opposition bowling too much by looking to not score rather than maybe blunt them by making the scoreboard tick over. So someone like a Warner against Broad gets talked about a lot. I think we underestimate just how good Broad and Anderson are as well. I mean, you know, nearly 1,000 wickets between them in international cricket, in Test cricket, is amazing. So they need to continue to be under guard for those two, but also, you know, respect their own talents.
Well, let's flip that. You're the bowling coach for Adam Zampa. I guess knowing what you know about the strengths and weaknesses of various batsmen, would you coach Zampa, for example, to take advantage of those weaknesses?
Someone like Zamps will look at something where he can put pressure on an area of a batsman's game where they're not as their strike rates aren't as high. Someone who sweeps well, maybe, you know, take the sweep shot out of play. How do you bowl more balls so they're not sweeping? Others who use their feet. It's to make sure that's difficult for them to get under at them. So it's just looking at the subtleties and the strengths and weaknesses of players. But also arming the player with enough information so that under pressure, they're going to what they do well rather than worrying too much about the opposition. Or, more importantly, not worrying about what Trent said to them or any coach. Because if they're thinking about what a coach said, their natural instincts for the game doesn't come out. And we know Chappelle, you know, Ian Chappell's always been strong on undercoaching. You need to put players in environments where they can, their instincts, because they're so well tuned and they have such belief in the games that they can read the play really well.
Yeah. What did Gipelli say? The coach is the thing that should drive you to and from the ground. I think his words. Of course, we've got the Big Bash kicking off on Sunday. The Sixers take on the Stars, a great rivalry, that game at the SCG. And look, the men of Magenta, they're two-time defending champions. Just give us a sense of who you think of the team to beat. And further to that, which players are going to make a real splash this season?
Sixers, most definitely team to beat. I think it comes from their fielding. I think their fielding squeezes teams more than anyone else. I had a conversation with their head coach yesterday, Greg Shippen, and we just spoke about fielding in general and their team. But with the players they have on the fence, people like Abbott and Silk and Onriks, it's very hard to run twos against them. So then that pressures the scoreboard into looking for big shots against them, and their bowlers are really disciplined. And obviously up front with Vincent Philippe, they've got some power there. Perth were impressive last year, so they're going to come back strong again. They probably got to the finals in the back of their overseas players, but you'll also see their domestic players dominate again this year. So I reckon they'll challenge again with the Sixers. The Thunder, I feel, have the strongest all-round list from top to bottom. They cover every aspect, and with Billings and Hales, they're back again, and the quick bowl from England, Saqib Mahmood, who's a really good player, and I think they'll be hoping they don't lose him to the Ashes because he's got some pace and he's got some talent, so he'll be a great addition to the Thunder. And then the Melbourne teams, they'll be looking to bounce back next year. David Saker coaching the Renegades will do a really good job there. with Finch Madison, the big recruit for the Renegades, and I've sort of earmarked him for player of the tournament. I think he's going to do something special for them. Can't discount the Stars with Zampa, Maxwell, Stoinis and Coulton Isle. And their overseas players will contribute well as well. Then it comes down to Hobart, Brisbane and Strikers. Brisbane and Adelaide, they're two talented teams. So they're going to bring domestic talent and overseas talent. Rashid Khan, best T20 player in the world. He's going to do his stuff. A young kid called George Garton, who's a left-hander from England. He's left-arm quick, who bowls probably 140-plus, can also whack him. He's probably going to light up the tournament this year too. So it's a lot to like. And with the Hobart Hurricanes having Matthew Wade there, Ben McDermott and Darcy Short, the bowlers are in for a lot of problems. And then you've got Sandeep Lamashane at the Hurricanes, who dominated for the Stars. And he's a mini Rashid Khan, and he'll set the tournament alight as well. So it's a pretty well-balanced tournament, and it will be how teams deal with pressure, of which the Sixers are number one at the moment. They owned the power surge last year with I think they're calling Jordan Silk the surgeon. And he's someone with Dan Christensen. That's, great nickname. And Silk dominated that phase of the game, and so did Christian. And I reckon the big one this year, Julian, is that bash boost. Who's gonna push more on those over 7 to 10 to get ahead on that bash boost scoreboard as well to put pressure on the team batting second more?
Yeah, the other thing too about those innovations, I think now with one season under the belt, they've probably got a more clearer picture of how they want to use it. Before I let you go, you've worked in all the top leagues in the world. Where does the big bash rate standard-wise?
It's very good. It's a tournament where there's a really good TV coverage and press coverage. So players recognise the pressure, especially young Australian players. And then when you've got guys like Tymal Mills, bowling heat, then Rashid Khan and the way he bowls, then you've got Alex Hales when you've got a bowl to him. There's pressure on both sides of the ball. So as a tournament, it's very, very good. And I think the new innovations have made a change to that. It's really tested guys the way they think about the game. And there's no easy moments now. You can't just skip through from 7 to 16 overs and push the ball around hoping for a big finish. That bash boost point will become more important this season. And also the power surge, teams are going to have to work out ways of quelling the flow of run. So I think it's a tournament that makes you think, but also there's plenty of talent. And it's definitely one of the leading competitions in the world.
Now, we're asking our listeners today, in the post-Bradman era, which player, Trent, would you have loved to have seen play T20 cricket? Who would have thrived?
First name comes to mind, Steve Richards.
Yeah. It's common.
I always talk about underestimating. I think what we underestimate with Viv was that he also just had, his mind for cricket was unbelievable. He was a superb captain, brilliant fielder. His bowling in T20 would have been deadly, but he just found a way that he knew whether he was chasing 7s, 10s, or 15s, he would have found a way of doing that. To me, he's number one on my list of someone I would have loved to have had a massive T20 career.
Yep, no disagreement at this end. Trent, thanks so much for your time. We'll catch all your work on the Raw and all the best for the upcoming Big Bash season.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
There he is, Trent Woodhill.